Thanks for listening to the Dr. Drew Podcast on Podcast One.
Hi, I'm a helpful Southern California Honda person, and recently we've been doing random acts of helpfulness, like building a shelter at a horse sanctuary or getting an adaptable bike for a child with special needs. And during the Honda Dream Garage Spring Event, we can help you too with a great deal on an award-winning Honda, like the CR-V. And Honda was named 2019 Best SUV Brand by U.S. News & World Report. Click the dealer locator link to find a dealer near you and go to SoCalHondaDealers.com to request a random act of helpfulness. View U.S. News Best Cars at cars.usnews.com.
Of course, women should desire sex as much as men and have that opportunity. It's not weird or abnormal, but they've been sort of sidelined in terms of the research to help women with their libido. This particular product was fought for by women. For Hers is helping women reclaim their sex drives and allow them to feel bold and confident. The way this works, a doctor will evaluate you, and if appropriate, you will be prescribed a treatment for HSDD, hypoactive sexual desire disorder. No need for in-person doctor visits, no pharmacy lines. For Hers has the only FDA-approved drug on the market to address HSDD for women. Whether your sex drive has changed after having kids, becoming postmenopausal, or perhaps you no longer desire it as frequently as you did, 4Hers is here to help women and give them an option. Order now. Our listeners can get started for only $29 by going to 4Hers, that's FORHERS.com/Drew right now. While supplies last, and it is, of course, subject to the physician approval, important safety information applies. See the website for full details. Go to 4Hers.com/DREW. One more time, FORHERS.com/Drew. 4Hers.com/DREW. Restrictions apply. See website for full details. And welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. Thank you all for supporting the people who support the pod. Be sure to click through where we ask you to, because got to keep the winds in the sail of the Corolla pirate ship. Don't forget checking out the stuff going on at DrDrew.com right now. We've got a whole series on transgender, and we're doing a little podcast series with a relatively famous transgender individual. You have to go over there and check it out to see what that's all about. And we, of course, had the opium series, where the entire history of opium is reviewed throughout human history, including how we got into our last opiate epidemic and what we did about it, what we did wrong, and how we got into this mess we're in presently. And, of course, You Live Is There, hashtag, and This Life, and Weekly Infusions, where some of the opium series and interviews can be found, and also Dr. Drew After Dark. Today, I'd like to welcome Laura Rose Levin. She is the founder of the Missing Peace Center for Anxiety, which we're going to talk about neurobiofeedback today. And missing peace is not like a piece of pie. It's like peace sign. Yeah, a peace of mind, P-E-A-C. You can check out the website, missing, M-I-S-S-I-N-G, peace, like, again, like peace sign, like no war, for anxiety. It's the number four, not F-O-R. And you can also follow Dr. Levin. I want to say Levin, at Rhodes Levin. Our Rhodes is R-H-O-D-E-S. And neurobiofeedback is what I want to talk about today and all of its various applications. So thank you for coming in.
Hey, my pleasure.
How'd you get into using this modality?
You know, I was teaching meditation at treatment centers, drug and alcohol abuse centers, and one of them said, "We like you. We really want you to learn neurofeedback." And I said, "Okay, sure." And I really could not believe what a game changer it was. It's really what was the first step in leading to my center. I went out on my own doing neurofeedback for people. And
explain how it works.
Well, I call it the Men in Black because it's been around for about 60 years.
60?
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
Yeah. But Big Pharma, not a fan.
Mm-hmm.
They want people on meds, but NASA uses it.
Well, I'll tell you, no. Because I was around when we were using it for all kinds of things. It's insurance companies that are not a fan. We used to use it in chronic pain centers. We used to do an addiction, and they will not reimburse for it.
They will now.
What they wanted was you to prescribe a pain medicine because that was easier and cheaper. And it was really the insurance industry that forced this thing. They forced the epidemic of opioids, but then they did it by marginalizing and refusing to acknowledge the multidisciplinary kinds of approaches to things like pain and addiction.
Yeah, I believe that to be true. Yeah. It's really, really unique and special, but it's so scientific. Mm-hmm. The Armed Forces, Camp Pendleton over here, started about 5 or 6 years ago with 20 soldiers for PTSD and then just exploded with it. They're bringing the exact kind of machine I use, actually, the exact program, over to Afghanistan, over to Iraq, just helping all the soldiers, because when you get to PTSD quickly, you have a much better chance of taming it.
Becomes less fixed.
Yeah. And a lot of sports teams use it because when you're in your head, you're not going to make that shot. But mm-hmm. when you're nice and mellow, you're in the zone, boom.
So it's a way of, I guess, visualizing what's going on in our brain. Would that be accurate?
Yeah. I didn't answer your question, did I? So neurofeedback is the brain looking at itself in the mirror and fixing itself.
And why can't we do that without looking at these objective images?
Because the brain, this master organ that fixes everything in our body. Right now, if you have a cut on your leg, it's sending signals through your nervous system, up through your spinal cord, to the brain. The brain's sending the signals back down. Our brains heal us through our nervous system. But the brain itself does not have nerve endings. I'm sure you know that. Mm-hmm. When you do brain surgery, the person's awake and you're poking around going, can you move your arm if I push here? So about 60 years ago, these two neuroscientists thought, if the brain could see itself, would it self-repair? And the answer is yes.
Now, there are different ways to get it to see itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can't be objective about any of our subjective states.
Correct.
So it's a way of externalizing our subjective states, right? It's looking at sort of clues of what's going on in our brain. I remember I worked with chronic pain patients for a while with neurobiofeedback techniques, and you could show the patient where they were reducing sort of regions of activity in their brain, the insular cortex, things like that. But that wasn't very, very effective, just showing them the mirror. What got more effective was when you created metaphors. Like, you know, we had a fireplace and they'd make the fire go up and the fire go down, because the patients, it's such a non-conscious, non-cognitive thing to sort of try to calm those parts of the brain or amplify those parts of the brain. We don't know how to do it.
Well, and what you're talking about is a slightly different modality than the one I like to use, because mm-hmm. what you're talking about involves a conscious process. Like if you make the flame go hotter because you've slowed down your heart rate. The system that I use is completely non-participatory with the person who's watching it.
Hmm.
It's the easiest therapy ever. They literally just sit back. So to explain a little further, if you'd like me to, we put electrodes on your head. The electrodes pick up the electrical activity from your brain and go into the computer. Now, these electrodes don't send any electricity into your body. Just like an EKG, you see the stickers on the chest, the pen goes up and down. There's no electric shock happening there. It's reading electrical activity. So what I work with a lot is the central nervous system, the amygdala, the limbic system, that emotion center of your brain. So we're going to be reflecting back the emotion center part of your brain. First, we work with the physical relaxation first. But when I started doing this years ago, you would actually sit and watch fractal images of your brain.
Right.
All you had to do was keep your eyes open and keep your ears open, and it did the work for you. Very cool, but more like Spirograph meets Pink Floyd. It's a pretty boring after 5 minutes. And now they've done it so that you can plug in a movie. You pick your favorite movie. Maybe it's Bridesmaids. Maybe it's Despicable Me because I work with kids. They watch the movie. Now, the movie looks pretty much the same, so your mind is engaged and you're not going to fall asleep. But it slightly fades a little and shrinks and does some weird movement. And that's your brain recognizing itself in live time. And it starts to self-repair.
So it's seeing signals that are not specifically cognitive.
Correct.
Yeah.
So in the cases of trauma, PTSD, what I tell people about anxiety and PTSD is it's not what's wrong with you. It's what's right with you. If you were a little kid and you're playing in the meadow with your friends and you hear a rustle in the bush and you see a fuzzy face and it eats your friend and you just met a lion – you're supposed to remember that, mm-hmm. but not consciously. It goes into your limbic system. And every single time you encounter something that's more frightening, it goes into that limbic system and it stays there. So by the time someone gets to me, their limbic system is pretty overwhelmed. So when they sit down in the chair and the brain looks at itself and it sees itself responding to 15, 20 lions, and it goes, oh my God, there's lions. But then it looks around the room and says, but I'm sitting in a chair and I'm relaxed and whoa, that's out of control. And it starts to calm this brain activity down.
Why does the screen changing in size or whatever do anything?
Well, that's just what it looks like. What it really is the fractal imagery coming through encoded in the movie. It's the actual brain activity that the brain is able to detect.
Tell us more about what that is.
The brain activity?
The fractal activity.
The fractal activity. So as I said before, we used to just look at the electrical activity of your brain with fractal images that represented it.
Right. We would turn it into other images and people would imagine, you know, elves digging out the pain and all kinds of other images that would sort of be represented depending on what the patient wanted to do, because they couldn't think to themselves, make the pain less or make my anxiety less. They had to enlist something that was ineffable and
right.
bodily based.
But then that's still patient dependent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've updated systems now so that they don't have to be participatory. They literally can just sit back and be amused. I like to explain it to people, like, imagine your brain had X-ray vision
mm-hmm.
and you were showing it its own activity, much like a hand underneath a puppet.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to watch a hand do this. It's boring. But if you put a cute puppet on it, now you've got my interest.
Right.
But the brain is able to see the hand movement underneath, or in this case, the actual brain movement. And that's what that fading and shrinking is.
What was actually going on there?
It's actually representing – you're actually seeing the electrical activity that we're – picking up from the electrodes.
What is a fractal? What are these? Is there an image behind the image that we're not seeing consciously?
No, what
is it the brain's picking up on exactly?
The brain's picking up on its own electrical activity.
I get it.
Okay.
Why not just look at that then?
It's boring.
Okay. But so what is it coming through then? What is it that the brain is seeing? Exactly what is it? It's not seeing the movie.
No.
What is it seeing?
It's seeing.
I'm seeing it's a representation of its electrical activity, but what is that representation?
Okay, so it's seeing dysregulated brain waves.
It's seeing a representation of that.
Yes.
What is the representation?
I'm so sorry. I feel like I'm not getting your question.
So we could just show brain waves.
Right.
But we're showing something else.
We're showing a movie.
But we're not just showing the movie.
Right.
We're doing something to the movie.
So
what is that something?
What's your favorite movie?
Let's just use Despicable Me for a sake of
Despicable Me.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So you're watching Despicable Me
yeah.
and the screen starts out really small
mm-hmm.
in a square.
Mm-hmm.
Takes about a minute for the brain to realize it's looking at itself. And then all of a sudden, the picture gets bigger.
How is it looking at itself and not just looking at a movie?
Because there's these little fades and shrinkage and just very nuanced movement.
Okay. What is that and how does that determine and who determines what that's going to be? Does a computer do that? What is that?
So
what are those messages sent through those, whatever those
there
things are?
There are no messages
or,
sent. It's
representations.
Okay.
It's a representation of the electrical activity. What is the representation?
But the representation is the fading. So –
what determines that?
The brain itself.
So there's many, many different electrodes recording, right?
Four to five.
And they're each mm-hmm. recording sort of different activity. Some are hot, some are less hot. What determines which one is going to determine what happens on that screen?
Okay. So in those five electrodes, you have a grounding wire
mm-hmm.
and you have – it's two channels. So it used to be when you did it both brain waves would come through one channel.
Okay.
Now they've separated it.
To two channels.
So let's say we're working with the amygdala.
Right.
So we're putting an electrode on your forehead.
And do we get to select which region of the brain we're dealing with?
Oh, yeah.
And what makes us determine which region we want to use?
So depending on what it is you want to do. The example I'm giving you with emotion is you want to make a connection between the frontal cortex and the limbic system. So you're going to work with the temporal lobe and the forehead. Let me give you an example that might be helpful.
Okay, so you want the prefrontal cortex to start to regulate the amygdala or to communicate with the amygdala somehow.
Yeah, we're just sort of relaxing the tension between the two. So if – now, I don't do this kind of work personally, but let's say someone had a foot injury and the doctor determined there is no nerve damage. We don't know why your foot's not moving. Mm-hmm. There's no reason it shouldn't be. So there's a cortical band across the top of your head, and there's a corresponding point to the foot. So if I were working on that, I would put the electrode right there, and that activity of that brain, of that foot, would be disguised in the movie, and the brain would look at it and go, why am I not moving my foot? Why is this not happening?
And what is the disguise? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I know.
Who makes the disguise?
The brain.
Who makes the disguise? Not who responds to the disguise. The electrode comes out and it comes in disguised. Who does the disguising? How is that disguise determined?
The computer.
A computer. Okay.
Okay.
And what is the computer doing?
So the computer is reading the brainwave. So if I were looking at my monitor, I'm glad we if I were looking at my monitor, not the screen that the patient is looking at.
Right.
I'm looking at a brainwave going up and down. That activity, and I'm not a neuroscientist, so I can't tell you how – I mean, I'm not a computer IT or anything like that. So that brainwave itself gets encoded into the movie through an HDMI cable.
Okay. So now it's encoded in terms of size of the screen. That's the encoding? Changes in size of the screen is what – the computer's encoding?
Yeah, it changes the size. It fades a little bit.
Okay, so fading and intensity and stuff. So there's some visual cortical response mechanism of looking at this sort of fading, and somehow so the brain recognizes it as a region, a mirror of some region that it's seeing.
Yes.
How does the visual cortex hook up to all this?
Well, that's how the brain's getting the information. So remember when I said earlier the way we get information is through the nerve endings, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the way we're getting the information now is through the eyes and through the ears. So the sound also fluctuates. It does.
Oh.
When we used to look at the fractal images, you would just hear like beep, bop, 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 you know, weird.
What's the science behind that? How did they determine those particular changes?
That I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
It was just, how do we show the brain itself? Okay. How do we get the brain to sense itself? Well, let's use the senses we have access to.
Okay.
So vision is the sense we have access to. So let's give it to the eyes. Let's give it to the ears.
Okay. And somehow the brain recognizes through some sort of cortical parietal connection, visual occipital cortical parietal connection, the timing of the what's ever going on in – we were talking about the foot, for instance, and that timing, somehow the brain recognizes that and starts responding positively to that. And why would the brain necessarily – why wouldn't it go the other way?
Because it is really more like looking in the mirror. If you looked in the mirror, you would go – you immediately start going, oh, you know, my hair's a mess. I've got food in my teeth. I don't remember eating spaghetti.
People do all kinds of horrible things looking in the mirror. It amplifies – pathologies. They start picking. They start
well, that too.
Cutting.
But what this is referring to, are you familiar with the Rouge test? It's a psychological test that they do on animals, on babies.
Oh,
it's
the self-identity test where they put a
the
mark
awareness.
On them. Yeah.
Yes. So they determine at what age a baby becomes self-aware by putting rouge on them and putting them in front of the mirror, and they naturally know, oh, this is not supposed to be here, and they wipe it off.
Right.
That's essentially what the brain is doing. It's looking at itself and going, why am I acting that way? There's no reason in the room for me to be acting that way. There's nothing going on right here that is causing this brain activity.
Do you also give any sort of verbal kinds of feedback or guidance or anything? Are there any neurobiofeedbacks where they do that?
Yeah, and that's when it's a conscious process. That's when they're guiding you through certain stuff. Now, there is an alpha-theta state, which is an eyes-closed one that's done only with sound. And that is what we use for trauma work after we've gotten the system regulated. And in that case, I would say to the person just at the beginning, you know, think of something that would be incredibly stressful for you that's coming up. And just think about it for a minute. Imagine it in your body. Imagine how you would feel it. And then in the next minute, as weird as it is, just think, I'm okay. That's going to happen and I'm going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And then you just let the brain go. Because in an alpha theta state, you're in a suggestible state. When you're in hypnosis, they're trying to get you into an alpha theta state. So by giving the patient that suggestion, I like to tell people it's sort of like when you punch something into a slow computer and you just see the circle going around and like 20 minutes later, the answer pops up. Mm-hmm. It's not dissimilar to that. So when I'm working with abused women, let's say, who've had a real trauma in the past, I will ask them to imagine what it feels like when they think of that person and how it feels in their body. And then in the next minute, think to themselves, I don't feel anything. I'm fine. I'm not scared. I'm not frightened. And what starts to happen, interestingly enough, is it usually comes through in the dream state. So if a person has been abused, they will often have dreams of their abuser where they're being dominated. They wake up with night terrors. They wake up screaming. And now all of a sudden in the dream, there was this one person. She was throwing the abuser stuff out the window of their house. She was just saying, get out, just get out of here. And they start to shift into the dominant position of that which is frightening them. And it's their subconscious catching up with that trauma. And
we see the alpha theta state. Do you have to get them into that state somehow?
The brain forces itself into that state by use of the computer. So
it's the auditory thing again.
Yes.
Is it something you have to train somebody to do that, or are they – the way the feedback works, it automatically gets them there.
The feedback automatically gets them there.
Is everybody prone to that, or do you have to mm-hmm. – everybody can get an alpha theta?
Oh, yeah.
So if I put on those headphones and we hooked me up and I heard whatever was coming back, I would get into an alpha theta state automatically.
You would. And we are making sure that the sense is in the room. You know, the room is dark. You have, you know, an eye mask on. If there were somebody standing next to you yelling and screaming, you would never go into the alpha state. Mm-hmm. So we set up the circumstances so that you can be in that
place. And what
am
I hearing when that's happening?
People can pick different sounds, actually. I believe there's like a fire crackling one. There's a stream one. One of my favorites was you could tell when you were going into theta because you would hear this sort of train noise. And you knew like, oh, my God, I'm there.
And you'd hear train noise. From within something you were already listening
from
to?
From the headphones. So there's no movie when you're doing the alpha theta.
Right.
That's just sounds.
Now, that kind of makes more sense to me than the movie in terms of unlocking locked-in trauma states, right? I mean, because people just get locked into this cycle of constantly experiencing their trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And to getting them to break that is really what it's all about. How many times do they have to do this to sort of get them out of that cycle? Is it repeated biofeedback, you know, treatments?
It is. You know, people say it's a minimum of – they say approximately 20 sessions. I do not get that, honestly. I've been doing this for a really long time. And there's so many phases you can take the brain through of just – if I'm working with someone with fibromyalgia, I'm just going to first relax that nervous system. That's a whole other part of the brain than the emotional part of the brain. Then you can get into the trauma work. Then you can move into peak left-right brain stabilization. Then peak performance. So I tell people it's like going to the gym. You could go and lose 5 pounds, or you could go and get into really good shape.
Could people do this on their own?
No. No, because you have to be a clinician to use the technology. However, I have done with patients that they, for some reason legally, you need to do 20 sessions with them first, and you're showing them how to do it, how to manage it, and then they do take the machine home, they rent it, they pay the cost for it, and you teach them how to do the electrodes or a partner to do the electrodes. And you have weekly clinical sessions with them on the phone. So they're telling you, well, this week I did the temporal lobe on both sides, T3, T4, and I just had the worst headache. And okay, well, let's turn down the frequency a little bit. And so you're guiding them, but you're never just taking this machine home and doing it unless you really know what you're doing. It's your brain.
Let's talk about CBDs. Everyone's hearing about it today, and there have been some really interesting anecdotal reports. It's a topic I get asked about a lot. Bottom line on CBD, lots more claims than clinical evidence right now. Many people are using it and reporting results. That is encouraging, but clinical science needs to catch up. I want to first define exactly what I'm talking about here. CBD, or cannabidiol, is an extract from hemp. And while you might associate it with marijuana, CBD is the non-high-inducing, non-addictive component of hemp, and it is responsible for the calming and relaxing effects that many people experience, not the liability of addiction and high. Now, about the products. There are a ton on the market today. Forgetting the vast array of reported health benefits, it's important to be aware of what you're buying. I was recently introduced to a company called Select CBD, an Oregon-based company that focuses on high-quality ingredients and manufacturing standards, not hype. Their CBD-based products are available in a wide range of formulations and flavors, each of which is clearly described so you can make an informed decision, preferably with the input of your physician, without all the promises that sound too good to be true. Like I said, the reported benefits of CBD are compelling. I'm excited to see how things develop as science catches up with the booming industry. So if you're ready to try CBD, check out Select CBD. To learn more, go to drdrew.com/select. That is at my site, drdrew.com/SELECT. For a limited time, you can save 25% at checkout with the code DRDREW. Again, save 25% with the code Dr. Drew. If you like this show, you're going to love Gals on the Go on Podcast One. Join influencers and college students Danielle Carolan and Brooke Michio as they share tips on being productive, to stories of all their travel adventures while being full-time students, and oh, much more. Download new episodes of Gals on the Go every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. One Night, One Goal, Stop Suicide. It's the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's Out of the Darkness Overnight Walk. It's the largest suicide prevention event in history. It's coming to San Francisco on June 8th and Boston on June 22nd. Register today for the overnight and join thousands as we walk all night to raise funds and awareness for suicide prevention. People describe the overnight as one of the most powerful experiences of their lives. Whether you walk on your own or with an overnight team, together we walk over 16 miles from dusk till dawn. You'll see landmarks by moonlight, form lasting relationships, and raise millions for this important cause. Money raised supports the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Be part of something extraordinary. Register today at theovernight.org/Dr. Drew. Again, theovernight.org/DRDREW and receive half off your registration fee with that promo code Dr. Drew. That's theovernight.org/DRDREW or call 888-THE-OVERNIGHT. That's 888-843-6837. Now, every car comes with its share of stories, but you can't put a price on those stories, but you can find out how much your car is worth, of course, with True Car. All right, you just go to True Car. Simply enter your license plate number and watch your car's details come on up. Then answer a few questions, and that's it. Once you're finished, you get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local True Car certified dealer to cash out or trade in. And when you're assessing your car's value, things like navigation or moonroof, you can see it bump up the value of your car. High mileage, well, you know that was going to be a problem. This is all assessed as part of your true cash offer. Again, you finish, you get the true cash offer, it's sent in minutes. And if you want to trade in, you use True Car to look at a scattergram for a car you're interested in, whether new or used. You find a fair price, you learn about that car, you know it's a true price because it includes fees and accessories. And of course, those True Car certified dealers compete for your business, so it's a fair price. So go ahead, trade in or just get the cash. When you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today. True cash offer not available in all areas. And then what is it you're doing while you're watching them go through the experience?
So what I do is I work on self-report with them and I adjust accordingly. Certain people need different frequencies. As people's brains change, the sensitivity of their brain changes, so the frequency levels are going to change. Once someone's feeling a certain way for a while, and we know, so the way I explain it to people, imagine a dysregulated brainwave is like grass standing straight up in the air.
Okay.
When you step on grass, it goes flat.
Mm-hmm.
But when you move your foot, it slowly pops back up. But if you keep walking on it over and over, you're going to create a new pathway.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm working with someone who, say, has fibromyalgia or high anxiety, and we're just relaxing that physical body, after the first session, they either feel nothing, which doesn't mean nothing happened, they feel tired, or they feel a little high. And that sensation lasts for like an hour or two, and then it goes away. But with every session that they're doing, it lasts longer and longer and longer. And now they're just in different states. And the awesome thing is the brain is so good at fixing itself that it fixes more than what we just want it to.
Hmm.
So I've had people come in, grown men who need to get off Adderall. Your heart can only take it for so long. And their moods start getting so much better because your brain is functioning at a different level. It's healthier. Your neurotransmitters are firing differently. And this guy said, it's so weird. I thought I was noticing people like smiling at me more when I opened the door. And then my daughter said to me, Daddy, you smile so much now. And he said it was bittersweet because he felt badly that he wasn't smiling before.
Fibromyalgia, what is your perception of what their needs are?
For me, in the way that I'm able to treat it, mm-hmm. is just the reduction of the central nervous system agitation, relaxing that whole central nervous system. And then there's a physical component too. Someone was asking me, why are you getting such good results from neurofeedback?
With fibromyalgia?
With anything. Mm. And I say, I talk to them. I talk to people. So a lot of technicians.
During the?
No, before, yeah. After. That's how I became a therapist. They said, why aren't you my real therapist? I wish you were my real therapist. I thought, well, why am I not? What if they stop making this machine? Then I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
So it's a conscious process and looking at how they're thinking about things, how they're.
What's the common feature? Any common threads there?
With fibromyalgia? Mm-hmm.
I find
mostly women.
All I know is that always trauma and always a sleep disturbance. Those are the two things mm-hmm. I always see.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of resolving it, though, tell me what you get.
I notice just when I – and I'm sure the demographic lies outside this, but I usually notice women who are slightly underfed, again, lacking the sleep, a lot of anxiety and trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And now your nerve endings are frayed.
Mm-hmm. And so you get them to reduce the anxiety. Did you get into the trauma?
Well, the trauma piece is something completely different. I don't always do the trauma piece with someone who has fibromyalgia. It depends on how many sessions I'm going to get them for. And that's why I say you don't want to just go get rid of the one thing you want and then walk away. You can, but there's usually layers and other stuff.
Does the fibromyalgia get better without treating the trauma?
Yeah. Well,
I guess if you get the sleep
in
restored.
Some cases, I have had people say that their fibromyalgia has gone away, and I don't see them, you know, after that. I don't know.
Right.
Some people do come in for tune-ups, but sleep's another thing. I call it a side effect, but it's not really. I had a guy that came in. He had rheumatoid arthritis. I said, I can't do anything with that, but I can help maybe reduce the pain. And he said, this is crazy. I have lived in my house 30 years. I have had a drawer full of sleeping pills for 30 years. Mm. I dumped it out. Mm. And I ran into him 2 years later at Jinkies. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. And I said, are you still sleeping? Because I'm always curious. He said, like a baby.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And pain, and when pain perception, what part of the brain are you typically working with?
Well, with pain perception, it really depends on the kind of pain, but usually I'm going to start off working with both sides of the brain, the left and right hemispheres, because there's a circuit that's going on there that's unpleasant for the body. If I'm treating pain and it doesn't subside when I'm treating both hemispheres, then I know it's emotional. And then I switch the protocol to work on physical relaxation, then emotional relaxation.
You know, one thing we know about emotional pain is that it's the insular cortex that's going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you particularly
it's that limbic system?
Do you particularly look at the insula, or can you isolate that?
I think we are with the electrodes,
right? And
by simply showing that one area,
right? So you're able to reduce some of the activity in the insula. And is this still the visual thing now, or is this now back to the auditory thing?
Same thing, the visual.
Visual. I got a little confused on the auditory. When do you use the auditory versus the visual?
You're either using auditory with visual,
right,
or just auditory.
When are you using just auditory?
Only for alpha theta.
For
trauma.
Trauma. And is that after you've treated other stuff typically?
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to hook someone up to that unless they're physically and emotionally relaxed. They will become incredibly agitated and very dysregulated.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Just by trying to go into an alpha state.
Mm-hmm. I had someone say that they wanted to throw the computer across the room. And I was like, okay, may have moved there too early.
Yeah.
Well, what it's really doing, at least as how it was described to me, is it's going through the trauma file cabinet and putting things in a safe place. If the trauma file cabinet's not ready to be opened and there's no real sustainability emotionally for it, no ego strength for it, it's going to have a strong reaction. It's going to say, get out. You're not invited in here yet.
And so what do you go back to the visual?
Yeah.
Biofeedback?
Then I go back to, all right, let's work on a little bit more emotional dysregulation. And I'll do some talk therapy too. I mean, I kind of do it all together.
Mm-hmm.
I say, I think I'm a really good therapist, but you need more than flour to make cake. And so in my facility, we've got a clinical aromatherapist, we've got movement, we've got art therapy, CBT, DBT, trauma, massage even. Alpha stimulation is really good.
And how are you picking patients for each modality?
Most people come for an intensive outpatient program, and they do the whole thing. They get everything when they come into the center. They get neuro 3 days a week, they get alpha stim. They get the therapy once a week. They do groups.
How do you know which is the thing that's working?
You know, they'll actually let you know. They'll tell you. Now, I don't take people's advice right off the top because someone with high anxiety is going to tell me, I can't do group therapy. That's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I always say is, let's try everything. Trust me, please. And then we can start eliminating things later. And people have a sense of what relaxes them, what feels good. Neuro is one of those ones that people just know the neuro is helpful. They don't always respond necessarily to the aromatherapist or the art therapist or the massage, but they know the neuro. It's interesting.
Is there a predominant pathology you're seeing these days?
Well, see, I'm an anxiety and depression clinic or center. So that's really all that I deal with.
But I'm imagining that, you know, with the primary symptom being anxiety or depression,
mm-hmm,
you're still seeing plenty of character pathology and addiction and trauma and everything else. I imagine there's trends of one thing or another that's predominates.
Yeah, they're abuse, either emotional or physical at some point along the line.
Trauma, yeah.
I don't, even though I've worked in addiction centers and I've been sober for 13 years myself and I love it, I like people to have that part
under control, yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of the time when you're on benzos, your brain can't even recognize itself.
Right.
If it does, it's not going to do any long-term repair. And I want to work with people who are in a place where they want to get better. I want help. I don't want to drag someone through help.
You're going to work harder than they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for DBT these days, this is dialectical behavioral therapy, which is kind of a new therapy in the sense of its commonplace application. It's been around for a while, but it's like it's always used now.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's used in lots of different settings. It was originally sort of designed for borderline process, right? For borderline disorder. Why do you think it's having utility in many, many other areas now?
Well, you know, I was just at the anxiety.
And explain to people what it is if you don't mind.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
So to answer the second question first, dialectical behavioral therapy and CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, has to do, dialectical is how we talk to ourselves. That's the dialect. How are you talking to yourself? Are you catastrophizing? Are you using black and white thinking like, things never work out for me. People always hate me. I'm terrified of such and such. Those are very limiting ways of thinking about the world. And you can usually find your way into that. Beck has the Socratic questions, which say, is what you're telling yourself completely true? Is it ever not true? And so with borderline in particular.
That's more CBT though, right?
No, that's DBT.
That's more DBT.
DBT okay. is overgeneralization, catastrophizing, black and white thinking, and one more, which I won't take up dead air time trying to remember. But I was at the Anxiety and Depression Conference in Chicago last weekend, and they said the number one call they get now is, tell me about integrative medicine. I'm tired of taking the pills. And I actually am getting to head up the special interest group. I'm co-chairing the special interest group because it's all this stuff has been marginalized for so long. It's always sounded so woo-woo,
if you will.
The integrative stuff. I've had people look at neurofeedback and say, well, this is, you know, I've never believed in the hocus pocus stuff, but this really works. Like, this is stuff of neuroscientists.
Yes.
It doesn't get any less hocus pocus than this. But I'm really trying to reintroduce the phrase, come to your senses. I always thought of that as someone in a black and white movie slapping someone around.
Right.
But we're animals. And our frontal cortex is an egomaniac. It wants to fix everything by thinking our way out of it. But if your dog was stressed out, you wouldn't say, well, tell me, Fluffy, what do you think excited you in this way?
Right.
You would soothe it.
Right.
So essential oils, I think they are so essential. There are different smells. It's our oldest sense smell. What's your favorite place to go on a vacation?
Beach.
Okay. When you're in Hawaii, you don't care about your taxes. And the reason why is all your senses have become engaged. It looks beautiful. It smells good. It sounds good. It feels good on your skin. So all that attention that our frontal cortex tends to take up gets muted in the background because your senses have taken
over. Unless you have a generalized anxiety disorder like me. So I'm smiling. I'm smiling at you.
Are you not able to relax on the beach?
I can, but I definitely have a GAD sort of tendency.
Okay. And yeah. So that's why the center has evolved the way it has, because let's give you the short-term tools like smell some aromatherapy just in the moment. Just engage two or three of your senses, like actively concentrate on them.
Makes sense. All these modalities. The point is the cumulative. I want to get back to DBT and CBT because we didn't finish explaining what they are.
Okay. And then the reason why the neurofeedback is that's long-term changes.
Mm-hmm.
So now once your brain is regulated, now that essential oil will relax you on the beach.
Well, and the ultimate goal of treatment, I think these days, is regulation, emotional regulation, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the deficiency that most of us have.
Self-soothing.
Emotional dysregulation of all types. And so getting back to DBT and its role in all this, because I think of that more as a way of controlling managing characterological processes. So tell me how it's different. Why is it being used so widely these days?
Because the person that we spend the most time with is ourself, our own inner voice. And so many of us say things to ourselves that if a friend said, you'd throw them out of your house. You'd be like, oh my God, you're a horrible person. Get out of here. But we say that stuff to ourselves all the time. I have a sign in my office that says, anxiety is a liar that predicts doom.
Mm.
So, and it makes a great case for it. It will tell you all the reasons why everything's about to just go to shit and crumble before your eyes. So if you have a good lawyer who can now create a case against that, which comes through your thoughts, it comes through how you're thinking about things, and you can debunk that myth that you're buying into, now everything is doable.
Explain to people how DBT works, how you do it.
DBT, there's a lot of places that do DBT in a group and they go through workbooks. I do have that stuff. I find that, not that workbooks don't work, but I feel like when you talk to people in real time and you point out, gosh, look at the way you said that. Is there a different way you could say that? Let's try saying that a different way.
And how is that different than CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy?
Well, cognitive behavioral therapy isn't so much about your self-talk. It is, but it's about your thoughts, what you're thinking about.
So beliefs.
So a lot of times, if I go back to the lion example, mm-hmm. you've got so much trauma, you think everything's a lion. Well, maybe it's really a man in a lion outfit, and there's nothing to be afraid of. So how are you thinking about that? God, I'm going to school, you know, working with college kids.
How is that different than the self-talk we were discussing in DBT?
Because with CBT, you're conceptualizing something tangible. You're conceptualizing an experience. Mm-hmm. If I had to really – DBT is so much more about adjectives, if you will, to reduce it to the most – to the smallest form. It's that black and white thinking of I – hate flying. So let's use this as an example. I hate flying is the DBT part. So changing the way you're going to say that. The CBT is how you're picturing the flying. Mm-hmm. The plane's going to go down. I'm going to die. The seats are tiny. I'm uncomfortable. That's more the CBT part. Right. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
This is what I want people to understand this because it's a good way to – because these terms are thrown around a lot. I realize I've never really gotten into that in this podcast.
And yeah.
People need to kind of understand what these things are. DBT also helps with projective identification. Is that because of the black and white thinking or just the
–
help people adjust to you do reality testing better? Is that part of DBT?
I think that when you're really judgmental of yourself, you're going to be judgmental of others.
Interesting.
And when you're really compassionate with yourself, you tend to be more compassionate with others. So we project onto the world what we're telling ourselves so that we can keep our story the same.
Our story about ourselves or about the world? Both, yeah.
Yeah.
Why do we get so locked into stories or the story that we believe? Kind of a philosophical question, really.
Well, and this may get into some woo stuff too, is I believe that we are energy. We've got an energetic vibration. Mm-hmm. Everything, this microphone I'm speaking into is energy. Mm-hmm. Our genes are energy and the genes we wear and the genes in our body. If I said to you 200 years ago that I have this box over here and if I turn this knob, I get music from 30 miles away. But mm-hmm. if I turn the knob just a tiny bit this way, I get music from someplace else. And I'm telling you about radio waves, I would have been burned at the stake mm-hmm. for talk like that. Mm-hmm. I do believe, just from my own experience, you know, if I can use a drug thing as an example, when I was getting high, it was never a problem for me to find pot. It didn't matter whether I had money or didn't have money. Everybody I knew was high. The energy vibration I was traveling in facilitated that. Once I got sober, there was no one offering me a bud in a parking lot, just out of coincidence. My friends, it wasn't that they were all sober, but they were in a sober mentality. They weren't in that place of mm-hmm. self-loathing. And so I think when we are speaking negatively to ourselves and we believe our story, if you will, and we say, well, my dad abused me, why do we get attracted then to someone who abuses us?
Why?
Because we believe that that is the real exchange in the world. We believe that's how we should be treated. And we that remember, conscious mind and subconscious, totally different.
Different system.
You're talking 12% versus 88%. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you can think, well, I don't want to be abused. I don't want to be beaten. But if you've already got the energy field that you really think that somehow you deserve that, you will bring it in. And there's a subconscious piece from what I understand that we believe that if we can change this person, then somehow we can make the past okay. Maybe it wasn't just me.
I know that's a theory, but what I keep seeing over and over again is that trauma creates attraction to people in places that happen to be exactly like the original perpetrators, even though consciously you don't realize that. All you realize is, that guy got to have a date with him.
Exactly.
I got to sleep with that guy because he's super –
he said he's
lightning bolts, lightning bolts in my head. Without realizing, oh, shit, if I feel lightning bolts, I'm a perfect instrument. This central nervous system and this autonomic system is recreating the past somehow for some reason. From an evolutionary biology standpoint, some people believe it's the canary in the coal mine. It's like if people are traumatized, teach the rest of us to avoid trauma essentially and absorb all of it. So there's some evolutionary biological reason for it. I kind of feel like it's in a converse of what we're supposed to be doing is being attracted to good things. And that probably that same system gets adulterated in some way by trauma.
But think about that word attraction. Right? Yeah. Now, I've never done this experiment in myself, but I trust it to be true.
Yeah.
If you take a tuning fork in the key of C
and
you bang it, all the other C tuning forks in the proximity will vibrate. But the D's won't and the F's won't. So if you're vibrating –
But there's a specific reason for that in terms of how sound waves affect a fork, a particular
But that's
distance.
My theory is we are energy beings. Why does that lightning thing happen that you were talking about? It's when we pick up a frequency that vibrates with us.
Well, I mean that we don't have the language. I don't believe it. It's fascinating to me that you're pointing at your chest and your solar plexus, which are these – we happen to have huge nets of parasympathetic nervous tissue right here.
Yes.
We have no idea what that's doing. We have no idea how it works. 80% of the vagus nerve, which is locked into that huge thing lying over our chest, which is a big nervous plexus, is afferent. It's going to the brain. When I was in medical school, we were trained that the vagus was an efferent nerve that slows the heart down. And that's it. And maybe moves the stomach a little bit, maybe a little bit in the diaphragm. But we didn't even talk about the afferent, which was 80% of the nerve.
Yeah.
Coming out of these gigantic nervous webs that are sitting over our abdomen and over our chest, when somebody says they have a heartache, they mean they have a heartache.
Mm-hmm.
That's a part of your brain in your body that's sending information to your central nervous system. We have no idea how it works, but I'm totally convinced that we are sending and receiving information from
absolutely.
Those. I don't yet ready to use a language for it. I don't think we have language. Tuning forks and vibrations are as good as anything as far as I'm concerned because we just don't know.
I think that's why spirituality has become so prevalent.
Well, I also think it's why things like telemedicine and things don't work because you have to have two bodies in space.
Totally agree. Yeah. Not a fan.
Yeah. They just don't work. And you can maybe give people some advice, but real therapy is not advice. Therapy is two bodies in space relating.
Connecting.
Yeah, connecting. And I'm wondering if – because you're good at that and you're recovering personal and stuff, maybe somehow that's figuring into some of the neurofeedback you're doing. You know what I mean?
Well, actually, the reason I say no is I don't do the neurofeedback myself anymore.
Ah, okay,
I used to sit in a room with a crossword puzzle. Yeah, she's fantastic too. But I know because there are people who will just come in for neurofeedback versus people who are getting more of the modalities.
Fair, you could stand at home, as you said, once you train them on it and stuff. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what kills me is, it's why I was pressing hard on this about the insurance company and stuff like that, because there was a time where pain centers did all this and they realized that you needed multiple modalities to do all these things we've been talking about to start to re-regulate the brain and get pain under control and get fibromyalgia under control and get sleep restored and get people to regulate their affective states. And it's all clearly a non-cognitive process. It's not somebody sitting you – like you're not sitting back, Laura, going, let me give you some advice on how to manage your life. We didn't say one thing about that in an hour of conversation.
Right.
We talked about how bodies relate and how brains regulate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's – and maybe it's the time we're in, but we are in a time of massive dysregulation.
We are. Yeah. And if you want, I'll say more on that.
Go.
So – we think we're so modern on our hoverboards and everything, but we're really primitive still. And the way I give people the example is we have to create a gym. We have to invent a building because we're not out chasing saber-toothed tigers and climbing the steeps for lavender.
Right.
Our bodies cannot be sustained in the lifestyle that we live. We just turn to mush.
Mm-hmm.
But our brains are going through the same thing. When they first put a person on a train going 10 miles an hour, they got vertigo.
Yeah.
Now you got people going down the freeway at 55 in air quotes.
And we're holding these screens.
You've
and
got
all
this,
stuff,
you've got that, you've got social
lights
media.
Lights, who knows what the lights are doing, all kinds of stuff.
Our brains do not get a rest. Amygdalas, our limbic systems are so overwhelmed.
And we've overlaid it with this massive prefrontal cortical system that we spend decades training and evolving.
Oh, yeah.
So we feel like that's in charge.
It's an egomaniac.
But it's back to Plato's idea of the charioteer trying to control the horses. That was his original construct.
I didn't know that one.
Oh, yeah. The horses and the chariot was the limbic system, and our frontal lobe was the charioteer trying to.
I love that.
Or some people say a monkey riding an elephant, if right. you really want to, you know, get more dramatic about it. And I think we're finally in mental health getting with what you and I are talking about here. But I think the public still thinks that therapy is some sort of advice giving. And it just couldn't be further. Now, again, back to the computer and telemedicine and things. If we could give advice through a screen, you give psychoeducation. Let's be fair. I mean, you can teach people about their illnesses. Mm-hmm. You could do psychiatry through a screen. You could teach people how to use medications and things. But you can't do therapy.
It's just limited because it is like you were talking about the solar plexus. Communication is 80 – it's like
– mostly we don't see it. We have no
idea. The verbal part is so small. You just walk up to someone and you get a feeling.
Well, we think it's all what you and I are doing right now talking into these microphones, but it's a tiny little piece. And we don't perceive most of it. And that's what your work shows.
Well, you have to train yourself to perceive it.
Well, I bet we can't perceive a lot of it. Maybe some of us are better than others and things, or we perceive it in ways we don't expect, maybe. I know when I open myself to a person in a listening environment, in a psychotherapy,
right.
The things I receive are not cognitive. They may be smells or sounds or music or bodily-based experiences.
Right.
Like we don't think about that out in the world very much. We're not
but
open
we
to
should.
That. Yes, we should.
We need to.
And I think we will leave it at that. I think it's been very interesting. It's been a very important, I think, little conversation because – these are all modalities that people are hearing about, and I've just never really spent the time to kind of step through it. And I apologize if I was pushing you on some stuff, but
I wasn't getting it.
Don't worry about it. I just want to have it there for people to understand what it is we're talking about. And you use the woo-woo moniker to describe some of this stuff. It's woo-woo in the sense that it's ineffable and inexplicable at times. It's not woo-woo. It's how our central nervous systems work and
exactly.
our autonomic nervous system.
Exactly.
So I'm gonna take that away and say
– thank you.
Yeah. It's you can think about it that way. That is not what it is. This is us trying to come to terms with healing parts of our nervous system that are non-conscious, non-cognitive, non-verbal.
And let me be clear. I do not think it's woo-woo. To me, this is science. This
me too.
Is science
me too.
All
People
over the place.
Think about it that way.
Yes,
But I'm gonna take that out of the conversation.
Thank you.
And say that it's – you can think about it that way if you wish, but ultimately we are trying to do science for a new age where we start to look at our bodily-based nervous system, our limbic system, as well as our cognitive systems.
Yes, the radio waves of our body.
We'll leave it at that. Thank you very much for spending time. It is the Missing Piece Center for Anxiety Peace, PEACE, Missing Piece 4, number 4, anxiety.com at Rhodes 11.
Yes.
Yes, R-H-O-D-E-S. And again, you can if any of this stuff is interesting to you, you can check her out the website, and I'm sure they'll be happy to see you. Where is the web? Where is your center?
Agora. We're in Agora.
So great. And thank you very much, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes. Only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.
Napa Know How.
It's Love Your Car Month at Napa. And to show your car the love, get a Napa bucket for $2.99 and save 20% on almost everything you can fit inside, like car wash, car wax, and tire shine. So save some cash and look good doing it by getting 20% off with a Napa bucket. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores, exclusions apply. Minimum 3 items may not be combined with other offers. Offer ends 4/30/19.
I'm Rita Foley with an AP News Minute. Notre Dame's rector says he will close the burned Paris Cathedral for up to 6 years. Almost $1 billion has been raised so far to help rebuild the cathedral. Donors include the companies Apple, L'Oreal, Chanel, and Dior, and individuals from around the world. The University of Notre Dame is giving $100,000. Spokesman Dennis Brown.
We wanted to reach out to our friends in France and try to help out in any way we could.
The redacted Mueller report comes out tomorrow.
Attorney General William Barr's four-page summary of the report says there was no criminal conspiracy between Russia and Trump associates. But Mueller did not provide a conclusion on whether President Trump obstructed justice. The president's inner circle is said to be bracing for embarrassing information that could be divulged, and his legal team is already preparing a lengthy rebuttal. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Authorities in the Denver area searching for an armed woman they say may be a threat to schools. I'm Rita Foley.